veteran
and his emotional support Canadian
scream into the void about the Mormon Church. If you want to reach us, we are on Instagram at NotSoPeterPriesthood.
And you can email us at NotSoPeterPriesthood@gmail.com.
Thanks for joining us. Enjoy!
Bye!
Listeners, we got a feisty one on our hands today. Whatever it is, but it's going to be interesting.
Buckle up, that is.
Dusty's in a spicy mood. Oh. And I'm here for it. And
I woke up and chose violence first thing this morning, so I don't know what's happening.
Oh, and we have like a semi. I mean, it might be good for like a heavier topic to be a little. I don't know. Whatever. Anyway.
Whatever helps you sleep at night.
Oh, before we get into this, I wanted to say. Tell a little snippet about how I ran into the sister missionaries again.
You see them so often.
They knocked on my door like a couple months ago, I want to say, and I was very kind, and I told them no thank you. And then this time I was walking my dog outside, just minding my own damn business. And I saw them. You know that moment where you see, like, don't make eye contact.
Yeah.
And I was like, shit.
Very
shit,
aware of that feeling.
And I was like, oh, they're coming over. And so I was like, oh, hi, how's it going? Ugh. And then they pet my dog. And that was cute, whatever. And he was very sweet with them. And
yeah, bite them.
Yeah.
And I feel bad for missionaries. Like, I used to get really annoyed with them, and now I want to be like, do you need a safe space?
I know. Well, the first time that they knocked on my door, I was like, you can come over when it's hot, get a drink of water, whatever you want. Like, I'm here, you know, if I'm here, then I can help, you know, I'm here for that, but I'm not here to talk about Jesus, you know. And
they don't want to talk to you about Jesus. They want to talk to you about Joseph.
Oh, that's right. Joseph. J-Dog.
J-Dog.
And
I don't know where that came from. I'm sorry. I've had enough drinks that my British accent's coming out.
What's your British name? Is it, Ethel? Ethel Hammer? I don't know.
I feel like it would still just be Dusty Johnson, honestly. Like, it's pretty British already.
I mean, mine is too, but I'd rather like something like, I don't know.
How do you make a British name? Is it like a stripper name where you like take the street you grew up on and your first pet's name was... What's your British name? Do you add Govna at the end?
Govna, yeah. All our British listeners, off.
I've dated enough Brits. I've taken enough for the team. You guys can just calm down.
Taking enough for the team. I am jealous because I would love to fuck a British man.
Ooh, yeah.
Anyway.
The Welsh accent specifically? Ah. Oh, yeah. Yes. Anyways,
back to the sister missionaries. So they
who did not have British accents.
I did not. Ethel Hammer does. I don't know.
Gertrude Longbottom.
Well, it's just like Harry Potter. You just add like. Weaselton to, you know, they just like,
yeah, we have a long bottom road down home. Yeah. Every time I drive by, I'd be like, Neville. It's gotten off the rails enough.
All right. Okay. Anyway, so the thing that I thought that was interesting about this interaction with them, they were like casual and like small talk, and it was like waiting for the bomb to drop of like, when you, and there was one that was like all like, she was like good cop, and then the other one was, you could tell she was like all business. She's like, yeah. Nope, gotta talk to him about that. Not the truth.
We gotta talk about Brother Joe.
She was like, do you go to church around here? And I was like, oh, fuck. And I was like, no, I don't actually. And I said, I'm ex-Mormon. And they were like, oh. And then, And then we talked about my dog a little bit more, and then the one that was actually casual, she was like, "So why don't you go to church anymore if you don't mind me asking?" And I was like, "Well, I'm gay, so there's that." And I was, yeah, and they were like, "Oh, well," and I was like, "Well, then I understand. Like, things are changing. You know, there's a lot of different. You know, I was being very nice, but like, I was just." I was like, I understand that things are changing, that their perceptions are changing, but the church still hasn't come back on anything that they've done with the as far as that goes. So
Yeah.
I don't see myself going back anytime soon.
You're
And
so nice. I don't know if I'd have been that nice. I'd have been like, well,
no.
children, let me tell you a story.
Part of it was I was caught off guard. Every time I'm caught off guard, you know, and honestly, if they like if they had pushed, I probably would have been a little more, a little less nice, you know. But
Yeah. Weren't you joking you
I
were going to ask them to come on the podcast with us?
yes. Honestly, I think it'd be
That.
great if they would be down for it and like not antagonistic, and if I could get Dusty to not be a bitch to them, then we'd be fine.
Can't leash me.
Can't be chained
I shan't be chained.
Ethelhammer.
Ethel Hammer. So concerned right now. He's just staring at me like, oh God, she's speaking in with a British accent. I better cut her off. I'm chained? Oh, you wish.
Kinky. All right. Well,
He has me pretty whipped, actually. That'd be so cute. Anyways.
right. Well, now that we've gone off the rails, we need to kind
All
of
right, fine. All right, what are we gonna
Well, okay. So this isn't like. I don't know why. Okay. I don't. So I was looking at the LDS Living to see, like, kind of what. To see if there was something, you know, anything that I could. Oh, what's a good topic, you know, that we could talk about? And I found this article about anticipatory grief, which I thought was interesting, which.
Yeah.
Yeah, because. Anyway,
Anticipatory grief. Also, I was just informed that I can't talk about Mormons while holding a Corona, so.
I mean, I'm holding a whiskey and we're talking about grief, so like, I feel
It's
like the
not the
ship has
Mormon
sailed.
way. Okay, anticipatory grief. Wow, I said that really clearly
You
for once in
did.
my life.
Good job, Ethel.
Nice.
Good
Thank you.
job, Ethel.
Righto.
Righto. All right. I don't remember. I don't have it. I copied and pasted this, so I don't have like who wrote this. But it doesn't matter. It was on LDS Living. Some Mormon wrote it. So, for many of us, it's easy to get ahead of ourselves when it comes to big emotions. Thinking about the imminent passing of a loved one, or anxiously living in a what-if or worst-case scenario state of mind, are all too commonplace for many people today.
Oh no. Okay.
Excuse me. Charlie Funk's husband, Lance, was diagnosed with early onset Alzheimer's in 2021 at the age of 51. And the idea of anticipatory grief, grieving an event that hasn't taken place yet, has come to describe her life all too well. But she's also learned to lean on important gospel principles to help her, especially in tough moments. I just want you to, we're just going to sit through this for a moment, but I do have a thing at the end that'll make this all better. So.
Do I get to smash stuff?
Violence, no.
All right.
I
Okay.
mean, you can smash. Never mind. I'm not gonna. That's for later. Your husband let you smash your ass, you know? Anyway. Once I heard the term anticipatory grief, I was like, that's exactly it. I know what's coming. It's like a long-term grief. You're grieving all along the way, but then you know what's coming too, and you know it's not going to get better. So just recent last year, my cousin, who she was 20 in her 20s,
Oh, yeah.
she had spinal cancer, like
Yeah.
a rare, very rare cancer. She just had backaches. They didn't know what was going on with her. And I it was very straight, like it just, and once they found the cancer, it was really fast. Like they just
Yeah, I
like,
remember you telling me they found cancer, and then the next thing you're like, it's my cousin's funeral. And I was like, holy shit, that was quick. Like,
yeah. And she was, so talk about anticipatory grief of like, I think cancer and like those diseases that are like long term, where you're just kind of slowly withering away. It's unfortunate, but those are like, that's where this comes into play a lot more.
For sure, yeah. You already know you're gonna have to say goodbye to the individual, yeah.
Yeah, and it's hard because you're just, there's like that anticipation within it, within grief, and grief already is complex enough, and then you've got this added layer of just waiting. And I know that's what my aunt went through. Like she was, but I think she was so caught up in like the doctors and the, you know, what can we do for her? She had a surgery that was fantastic. Everything went well, and then all of a sudden, like she was doing so good, and then she just took a turn for the worst, and just completely, that was the end. But it's also sad to me because she was dating a guy, and they quickly got sealed because they thought that, because of the belief that of
Of
the Mormon
course, yeah,
Church
of course.
that
She can't
she
die and
can't
not be
get,
sealed to somebody, yeah.
yeah, she can't get to the celestial kingdom without a man. So here's this
I
child who is like literally like 20 something. I think she was 25, something like that, when she died. And so still a kid, basically. And she gets married, whirlwind marriage to this guy that she barely knew, you know. And then they get buried. This was the other thing. They got, his family took over and were like, no, she's going to be buried in this cemetery where, like, where he can see her all the time. And it's like, he's going to get married some, because he's in his 20s. He's going to get
Yeah,
married
he's gonna
to some
find
other
somebody
woman
else. Yeah.
and spend the rest of his life with that woman. And then he's supposed to, according to their beliefs, like, she's, so he's going to have two wives. Like, I just, it's so messy.
Had
Anyway.
it been swapped and they got sealed and he died and she lived, she would not be able to be sealed to anybody else for the rest of her life. Isn't that so?
That's
Things
so
like that just make me like so angry.
yeah. I haven't talked about it much, but there's a friend of mine that committed suicide, and his wife is still not married because of that reason. Like she's
Yeah, because
just,
she
I think,
can't get sealed to anybody. So why would any man want to? He can't take her to the celestial kingdom, right?
well,
So.
and I don't think she wants to get married too. I think that's part
Yeah.
of it too. She wants to just like wait for him because,
Which, I mean, is completely fine. And there's, you do not have to have a partner to make your life full. But there's also that loneliness factor of you're just never gonna try and find someone,
yeah.
you know?
My grandma, so she was probably in her 60s when my grandpa died, and she spent like 30, 40 years, 30 years. She was probably in her 50s, actually, if you think about it. she spent about 30 years without anybody because she didn't want to get remarried.
Yeah, that's my grandma. My grandpa died when I was like 14, and she's been alone ever since. I'm only 39, but you know, that's still a long
Right. You're
time.
still a spring chicken. It's
I'm barely over 14 now.
fine. All right. So moving on. And so I have made a conscious effort to just slow down, delete things from my life that I can delete from my life, and just try and live my life at Lance's pace. Sometimes it's sitting on the couch with him for 2 hours while he naps. And I've got all this stuff going on in my head, like, oh, I should be doing laundry. I could get up and, excuse me, and do this. I should be doing this. But I've just made the effort to slow down and realize this is just a short time in my life, and going to take this time and just be with Lance. to just enjoy this and just lay my head on his shoulder and remember what it felt like to sit next to him and to hear him breathe and to remember that he is my person. It's so sweet.
That is really sweet.
But like in our like go, go, go world, like it's, I would imagine it would be hard. And that, I think that's part of this anticipation grief of just like, okay, it's good that she's like recognizing that she can slow down and enjoy the small moments with that person, because, you know, and at least like when my sister died, like I didn't have that. Like I didn't have the closing, that slow, gradual closing. So I think there's a, it's a two-sided thing where it's like, do I, would I rather have like known that she was going to die and like be able to treasure those moments, or would I just like, I don't know, like if I, if she has to die, then I, it's either way, you know.
Yeah, like one of my grandparents died very slowly over time, and one, it was a car accident, very quick, and it still hurts, it still hurts, they're still gone, so there's no, I don't think either way is better than the other.
Yeah,
it's still painful regardless.
For me, that that has been a huge blessing, and that is something I could do because I know that this is short term. It's not going to be a long term thing for us. I know I'll never be ready because it's not something I've experienced before. I don't really know what to expect as far as grieving the loss of a spouse, because right now he's still here. He's still in front of me. But I felt like Heavenly Father has given me this period of time to just be with Lance, and that was such a gift for me. It's interesting. So I wanted to kind of point out that like she's, there's this filter that she's giving of like, obviously that God is like granting her this time with her husband. And it's like,
He didn't die in a car accident. He had this disease so that she's blessed with the time. And it's God's doing because she's a faithful servant or whatever. Right.
Right. Right.
Yeah.
Which I guess is okay. But also like, is it real? You know, like, it's reality. I don't, anyway.
So that means the wife who lost her husband in a, you know, a plane explosion or something, she's less faithful. Like, it's, that's what the church does, is it pits everybody against each other, regardless of the situation. There's always a, someone's better than you because, and it's all made up bullshit.
Yeah. Okay. So this is where she gets a little, all right. It's hard to pinpoint one gospel principle that's helped the most because it's everything. It's the belief that we are eternal beings and this time here on earth is short term. It's the belief that this isn't the end. Yeah. With him again. And that I'm going to be with him again. Ooh, switching pages. And that even while I'm here, still here on earth, he's still going to be part of my life. For Charlie, her experience with anticipatory grief has been lightened by two specific gifts from God, the inspired thought to slow down and appreciate the time she does have with her husband, which I agree with. That's great. Like, that's a good way to cope with, and like, the grief that's the oncoming, the impending grief.
Yeah, for sure.
But it's this other one that I don't. And two, the knowledge that we are eternal beings with temporary earthly trials, but eternal relationships and eternal purpose.
I hate that part so much. You know my feelings on that part of the belief system.
Yeah. Well, and I keep thinking, like, nobody knows what happens when we die. So, like, I understand, like, if you get a diagnosis that's, like, terminal, and yes, enjoy, I would rather them just enjoy that time and not put God into it and just say, hey, we're going to spend the time that we can, and we're going to fuck everything else. We're going to enjoy the time that we have this, with this person, or with me, you know, if I'm the chronic person, like, enjoy the time you have with me, because it's all we have, and we don't know what's going to be on the other side. We have no idea if there is even another side. Like, all these religions say that there's all these, they have these ideas, like, oh, you know, we're going to be, you know, Mormons, it's all these handshakes, and you're going to be spitting out babies with, you know, for eternity, and
oh God, please no.
And then, you know, Catholics, I don't, you know, whatever it is, it's the just like playing harps and whatever. I don't, but I'm just like, nobody knows, and it's a great idea, and I think it's, you know, human to think of those, because we don't, death is such a scary thing for a lot, you know, we don't. I remember, I think it was Jerry Seinfeld, which garbage, but he did have a stand up where he said that, like, people would be, their biggest fear was this public speaking, And the second was death. And they was like,
Oh.
oh, so at a funeral, they would rather be in the casket than like
Than
having
the one
a
giving the
eulogy.
eulogy. That is funny.
So, I mean.
But I also wonder why it takes, like, death. Why is death the reason that these people are suddenly like, oh, now I'm going to start living for the moment?
Yes, that's another thing. That's like,
Like, I didn't sign my kids up for anything this summer because we've literally laid in bed and watched movies and sat in the pool and laughed and
it's made
because,
memories, yeah.
yeah, just being together without the hustle and the bustle because they're only this little for so short of a time and life gets so busy. I want to just remember them small when I can hold them on my lap because they're growing so fucking fast. The
Wow,
audacity.
your little one is like suddenly just like not a baby anymore
I know he's
anyway.
not a baby anymore. He's a little boy, and I'm like, what is happening? Stop eating vegetables. Eat junk food. Gross. Want to take up smoking? Jesus. Just kidding. I would never let my kids smoke. Not really. I just let them stay little for like a little bit.
But you're right. Like, why does it take the threat of death and the threat of the end, for us to slow down? And I do think that that's a lot of, to do with just we get caught in the routine and whatever, but like, it's easy to get caught in the routine, but it's sad that there's has to be some sort of external force to like, oh, I'm actually going to pay attention to my child that I haven't paid attention to for whatever, 30 years and
Gonna start crying. It's fine. It's fine. It's fine. Having a really hard day.
Oh. Anyway, all right. So if you're also experiencing anticipatory grief or anxiety in your life, consider any blessings God has put in your path. Have you ever been inspired to slow down or eliminate distractions? Are there specific things you can do today to be more present and less focused on the future? Which these are great questions, but like, I hate that there's like this filter of God with it, the
And that the
filter of
only
distractions.
reason you would feel inspired to do such a thing is because God put it in your mind. It's not that you're like looking at your life and wanting to live more fully for the
More
moment.
intentional and just having like more intentional connections and like
Get your
moments.
ass kicked in Uno by a 5-year-old nightly. That's
Humbling.
so, he's such a little cheat. Anyways.
Well, my nephew is that way, and so we play. It's called Dorky Dork. I don't know. I don't know if that's the actual name of it. It's a card game, and my family loves it. And I don't know. The only reason it's called Dorky Dork is because you're supposed to, if you're like the, what is it? If you have to take all the junk cards. I'm not going to explain all the rules. If you have to take all the junk cards, you're the dorky dork, and so you have to do something. You have to do like I'm a little teapot or something, usually, but my family doesn't play that way. All right. Are there people whose general presence brings you peace or joy? Is there a quote or conference talk or a scripture verse or a hymn that has brought you peace in the past? Like, can you ask God more specifically for solutions to the anxiety or grief you are experiencing? We know that God is in the details and knows all the small pleadings of our hearts, and He may be trying to help you, like Charlie, work through your moments of anticipatory grief or anxiety.
Oh yeah, okay.
Yeah, I just the
That's
first
gonna
like they're so
fix it.
close. I like that they, there's some good stuff in there. It's like, oh, that's been great. But like the filter of God, and I get it, it's from a church, okay, but
Of
like,
course, yeah.
so of course they're gonna, but can it just be like, hey, just enjoy the moments, just why do they have to even mention
Yeah.
that?
Stop waiting for your death in order to, yeah.
to live life and to enjoy the people that are around you. And
such a death cult. It's such a death cult. I just can't even.
Yeah. Ugh. All right. So switching gears, this is from Forbes, and this is kind of a more like, I guess the Mormons would say is worldly view of how to quote.
So realistic is what you're saying. Okay. Yeah. Based in reality. Cool.
Based on reality, look at anticipatory grief.
Science and data. Cool.
Yeah. It says, anticipatory grief, also referred to as anticipatory loss or preparatory grief, is the distress a person may feel in the days, months, or even years before the death of a loved one or other impending loss. It's the experience of knowing that a change is coming and starting to experience bereavement in the face of that, says Allison Werner Lynn, PhD, a licensed clinical social worker and associate professor at the University of Pennsylvania School of Social Policy and Practice in Philadelphia. Whew. Many of us have experienced anticipatory grief without realizing there's a name for it. She adds, some experts say anticipatory grief, when managed with coping techniques, can lessen the pain of post-loss grief. Others argue grief before loss has no effect on grief after loss. Who has anticipatory grief and when? Patients with a terminal illness, as well as their family members, friends, and caregivers, often experience anticipatory grief. However, any kind of looming change can bring on anticipatory grief. This is true even if the change is exciting and anticipated and chosen, says Werner Lynn. So I like that there's like, it could actually be even for a good thing. Like, mm-hmm. I'm moving or I'm changing jobs or, you know, like when I got out of the Navy, like that was like an anticipatory grief. Like I knew it was coming. Mm-hmm. I knew that there was a shift in my life coming, and it was like there was this sense of loss and the loss of identity and the loss of, mm-hmm. you know, what am I do now? You know,
even like when you have a baby, you have, they call it the baby blues, but it's for a lot of women, it's that realization that like, oh shit, this is everything's different now. And you get like really depressed sometimes.
Yeah.
Because yeah, it's, it shakes up your world.
Yeah. All of a sudden you're in charge of this little person.
Send you out of the hospital with no manual.
Let's see. So, for example, a person who puts a notice at her job may grieve the loss of friendship she expects will happen when she no longer sees her current coworkers every day.
So. Aw, you're having anticipatory grief over losing your coworker.
I know. Don't talk about it.
Oh, sorry. Okay.
I'm just kidding.
Oh, okay. All right. No. Talk about my trauma and the glad game. All right. Sorry.
No, I am losing a very good coworker that's like, I sit with her like 8 hours a day and like we just joke and banter and it's great. But so it's going to be a huge change and I've been like avoiding it, which is a great way of coping with anticipatory grief.
Absolutely. Avoidance is totally up there. Absolutely.
Let's see. Scenarios that may provoke anticipatory grief include, but are not limited to, diagnosis or progression of a degenerative disease, such as like what we've talked about, such as Alzheimer's disease or other forms of dementia or Parkinson's disease. Dementia scares me. Oh my God. In one study conducted in Cork, Ireland, 29 people caring for a family member with Parkinson's filled out questionnaires to assess their levels of anticipatory grief. Caregivers were preoccupied with thoughts about what life could have been if they were never diagnosed. Another scenario, end-of-life care. Anticipatory grief may affect the caregiver, the patient, or both. In one study of family caregivers in Japan, a woman taking care of her husband, a cancer patient who was expected to die within 6 months, said, I become anxious thinking about the future even when I am asleep. What should I do? My husband is the firstborn son. His 92-year-old mother is still doing well. He is genuinely firstborn. Everyone in the household relies on the firstborn son, and everything important is left to him. If he dies, everyone will be troubled. So sad.
That is sad.
Another scenario, caring for children with chronic disease.
Ugh. Any parent who has to do that, my heart breaks for them. It is such a tough road.
Yeah. Hereditary cancer risk. Anticipatory grief often surfaces in people who have genetic conditions that elevate their cancer risk, says Werner Lynn, who is also a senior advisor to the National Cancer Institute's clinical genetics branch and studies patients who have Lee-Fraumeni syndrome and BRCA mutations. Not entirely sure what those are, but, you know, cancer. In these cases, the patient imagines when a cancer diagnosis may come and how it will change the quality of life. Anyway. Awaiting an organ transplant, besides grieving the possible scenarios of their own death, patients on a heart transplant list were also grieving in this way for their potential heart donor and the death that would have to happen to extend their own lives.
Yeah.
Study published in the Journal of Heart and Lung Transplantation.
We had a friend who needed lungs, and you find yourself hoping that someone dies so that she can get... It was such...
That's such a mindfuck.
Yeah, it really was, because you don't want to lose this person, but that means somebody else had to die.
Yeah.
It's a really shitty place to be in. Mm. Yeah.
Let's see. Amputation. A review of 134 studies of the social and psychological challenges that face amputees found that the time before the operation can be the most upsetting. Patients express grief over the unknown surrounding their future, including pain, financial difficulties, general health, and future functional capabilities at home or on the job. Another one is impending loss of a pet, which, I mean, yeah. Anyway, a new job, a new relationship, a geographic move, or a teen leaving home for college.
Mm-hmm.
Even planned, desired life changes can prompt anticipatory grief related to the prospect of loss of identity, friends, or routine.
Baby going to kindergarten?
Oh, I know. Yeah, your whole thing's going to change with, like, he's going to be in full-time school, right?
No, still just part-time, but it's full days. Like, oh. 8:30 to 3. What? Oh. That's my baby. Yeah, I'm going to be volunteering a lot in the classroom. Oh. I'll be so embarrassed. Get out of here, Mom.
The anticipatory grief can also surface around pregnancy and childbirth, like we were talking about. In utero complications, parents who learn that their unborn baby may not survive can experience anticipatory grief around the potential loss.
Mm-hmm.
Premature birth. Anticipatory grief may set in as parents mourn the loss of their imagined or wished for baby as they struggle to develop a bond with their real baby. Mm-hmm. Right. Researchers in primary care for the premature infant. In some mothers, these feelings may be rooted in her belief that her inability to bring her baby to term is a personal failure.
Mm-hmm. Been there. Yep.
Absolutely heartbreaking.
This is really depressing. I'm glad we're talking about this today.
Drink up more.
My beer is empty. I had anticipatory grief that it was going to run out, and it did.
I didn't anticipatory grief.
I'll just hug my ice pack tighter.
There you go. The younger a person is, the more severely they may experience anticipatory grief, particularly as it relates to death. In a review of 15 studies exploring anticipatory grief and illness, doctors at the University of Illinois at Chicago found that younger caregivers and younger patients tended to report higher ratings of anticipatory grief.
Yeah, because they haven't lived as long. Yeah,
understand it. Yeah. In one study of adults with terminal cancer, patients under age 25 experienced more anticipatory grief than patients aged 26 to 55. The younger group viewed death as extinction, influencing their grief. Researchers found. So what's the difference between anticipatory grief versus conventional grief? Think of conventional grief as grieving backwards, says Werner Lin, mourning a loss that has already happened. Anticipatory grief is forward-looking. We're grieving what we still believe we might lose. This leaves space for hope, however unrealistic, that the loss may not occur. Anticipatory grievers might find themselves hanging on to possibilities in ways that may not be helpful, Werner Lin says. Conversely, in a situation like a pandemic, it can be helpful to step back and remember that the worst might not happen.
Too late for that advice. Thanks very much.
People undergoing anticipatory grief report a range of feelings that may include anger, irritability, anxiety, denial, the desire to withdraw from social situations, desperation, dread, guilt, an intense preoccupation with the dying person, lethargy or lack of motivation, loneliness, loss of control over one's emotions, sadness, tearfulness. I feel like I'm like reading off the
side. I was like, are you talking about me? On fire, Jesus.
You didn't know I'd attack you tonight, did you?
Seriously. I'm just sitting here sweating to death.
So the stages of anticipatory grief, there's no set order to what you might feel as you undergo anticipatory grief, and there's no finishing one feeling before you move to the next. So when my sister died, I remember them talking about the stages of grief and like, oh, you're at the anger, you know, you're at the denial, whatever. And
bargaining and
part of me was feeling like, oh, I would be going through them like one at a time and whatever. But it's really just like you're going back and forth and in and way in between all of
And some at the same time. And then you fall back into one. It's super fun, isn't it? Yeah. Grief's great.
You may experience many emotions one day and none the next. You may think you're done feeling a certain emotions only for them to return days or weeks later.
Years,
yeah. Like, oh, anyway, I'll be like just sitting there thinking, and all of a sudden I'll just like something. I'll hear a song, and I'm like just start bawling because like it reminds me of my sister, you know. With that in mind, here are four phases a person with anticipatory grief may experience, separately or simultaneously, in any order, according to the University of Rochester Medical Center, a nonprofit research university in Rochester, New York. First is accepting the death is inevitable. This phase often co-occurs with feelings of sadness and depression. Feeling concern for the dying person. For family and friends, this phase may express itself in regret. For example, feeling regret over past arguments or disagreements with the person that they are about to lose. For the dying person, this concern may translate to fear of what it's like to die. Rehearsing the death. A person may become focused on funeral arrangements. Oh, so depressing. Saying goodbye. Other concerns related directly to what will happen in the time immediately surrounding the impending death. So my cousin that died, apparently her funeral, I didn't get to go to it, but her funeral was more like a wedding reception kind of vibe. Like,
weird.
My parents even came back and thought it was just really fucking weird. That's so
saying something. Yeah.
Yeah. And that it was like, she didn't want it to be, I get it. Like she had gave her wishes of like, I don't want it to be a sad thing. I don't want it to be, you know, and so it was bright colors, and which is good, but like, they were just kind of like, and candy, there was like candies around and whatever, like her favorite candies, which is nice, but
it's cute. Yeah.
Yeah.
And at
my grandma's funeral. So she used to have M&Ms everywhere.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And which is great. But I remember going to her funeral, this is such a, anyway, they had a bowl of M&Ms that people were just like picking out of, and I was like, oh, that's disgusting.
No. No. Oh, I'm gonna be sick.
They were like, here, have some M&Ms, and I was like, I'm good. Oh, anyway, I'm like, I can have M&Ms and remember her when they're sanitary, so.
Sanitary M&Ms.
The last phase is to imagine the future. Family and friends may envision what life will be like without their loved one. This phase may include visualizing holidays and other special occasions without the person, or thinking about objects that would be left behind. Even my parents lately have been like kind of, my mom mostly, she had like a stroke, a really big stroke four years ago. And then,
no, it's only 3 years ago.
3 years ago? Yeah, something like that.
Oh my God. Time is flying.
Anyway, it was like 3 or 4 years ago. And,
somewhere in there.
Ever since then, she's been kind of like, she's gotten better now, but she's been very obsessed with death.
Like, oh no, she gonna start Swedish death cleaning?
Maybe. What does that mean?
You just like, you act as though you're dying and you clear everything out so that your family won't have to deal with it. It's called Swedish death cleaning. It's crazy.
She did that. Yeah.
Yeah. It's a weird practice. It's like a minimalism practice, but
she like got rid of so many books and stuff, and then she like, she's been kind of like clearing stuff out anyway. And then And she'll like give me like moments of like, oh, when I'm gone, and like, oh, you can have this when you're, you know, and like, oh, and even it's affected my little sister too, because she's
Oh,
like,
I bet, yeah.
we're gonna, she's like, I'm gonna have that when they're gone. I'm gonna have that when they're gone, you know, kind of thing. I'm like, that's not something we casually talk about. Like, you just don't like.
Seriously, I remember picking things up at my great grandma's house and there being like post-it notes of like who had claimed it. And I'm like, you guys are fucking weird. Like, so weird. So weird.
All right, so some potential benefits of anticipatory grief. Anticipatory grief doesn't necessarily reduce pain or laughter loss. Any potential benefits have largely been studied in the context of anticipatory grief before death. Some early research suggests the preemptive processing of a loss could help a person better cope once the loss occurred. Within this paradigm, the bereaved are able to deal with any unfinished business, say their goodbyes, clarify any misunderstandings, and prepare for social adjustments to come, thereby having a less distressful and disabling period of bereavement when the death occurs, according to a research review published in the journal Counseling, Psychotherapy, and Health. However, some recent studies are that the anticipatory grief has no effect on post-death bereavement. Others find the pre-loss anticipatory grief may be a factor in predicting prolonged grief disorder. At best, research is contradictory. However, keep in mind that one doesn't choose to feel anticipatory grief. More importantly, considering its benefits is making sure you get the proper help to work through it. See, this is why I like this, is because it's not like, oh, God gave me this time to be with this person, and I'm just gonna. And yes, it's nice to think I'm going to just enjoy the time that I have with them. But like, this feels like more realistic, like we were talking about. Like, it's just like, okay, we can talk about plans, we can make arrangements, we can kind of come to like a, you know,
Yeah.
unresolved issues that we've had, you know.
Making sure all your
And
legal stuff is all in order,
yeah.
housing, you know, that sort of thing. Like, those
Making
things
sure.
are unfortunately very important. Like, there's a family member of ours that died suddenly, without a will. And we're going on 2 years now of his daughter fighting with accounts and credit
Yeah.
cards, and because he didn't leave a will, and so it's fallen on her, and she gets in screaming matches with bankers trying to
Oh,
explain to him that, like, there's nobody to close the account. Like,
yeah.
it's unbelievable. So yeah, things like that, like she says all the time, she's like, please make sure your parents have a will.
Oh, my parents do. They have a whole big, I accidentally stumbled on like this big old binder that they had just sitting out, and it's like, oh, I'm not looking at that.
But it's kind of reassuring in the sense that they are not leaving a mess to be cleaned up. Like, God help me if something happens to my parents, because as the eldest daughter,
And
they
I,
got. Did
oh
you guys ever do that? We used
yeah,
to do that at my grandparents' house, and we'd have to say blessing on the food. We'd all thumbs up, and whoever was the last to put their thumbs up had to say the blessing on the food.
oh, I love that though. Yeah, no, that's great. We
Except for
did.
like my one aunt was like, that's so disrespectful. You should be honored to say that prayer. And we'd be like, then bless the food. Like,
Yeah, then you do
stop
it.
yakking and do it.
So we
Hungry.
eat. No, see, in my family, it's my dad will just sit there passive aggressively and fold his arms and wait until we all sit down. And then, even if you're like getting your food ready and you're like still getting your, you know, just still putting stuff on your plate, even you've been waiting for everybody else to do it, you're the last one to do it. But my dad will be just
Poor
anyway.
guy. Poor
Poor
Mr. Taylor.
brother Taylor.
Poor brother Taylor. He has to wait.
He usually calls on someone and whatever. Anyway.
My dad used to call on my husband.
So
And he'd be like, yeah, all right.
something that I think about all the time is that, so I have an uncle. My dad's twin brother has always been like kind of in and out of the church. He died last year, but he when I was going on my mission, we had our little like farewell dinner, farewell lunch, whatever, and I got to call on who said the prayer, and I called on him to say the prayer.
Of course you
I
did.
don't know what even like I don't still to this day just like what possessed me to do that. Like
Because you were
is the
going
whole
out
experiment.
to bring lost sheep back to
And
the
he was a
flock,
lost
and
sheep, so I
he was the
was.
lost sheep. You
So
just
essentially, I'm him now. So it would be like one of my nephews calling on me to say the prayer right now, and I could tell, he could tell that he was like, oh, I just remember his face being like, sure, he did it.
I love it. I want you at the next family dinner to be like, "Dear Lady Gaga."
So my little sister and I will do that. Used to do that too. We're like, in the name of Lady Gaga, what's her
I love it.
name? It's funny because like I'll be at my family dinners and my little sister and I will just be like nudging each other and like
Being children.
rolling our eyes at each other. Yes, being children. I'm 40 years old and I'm just like.
My cousin, who's like now in his 30s, when he was really little, they were like, "Okay, you're gonna say the blessing on the food," and he was like, "Bless the potatoes, bless
Oh.
the wolf's beef, don't bless the peas, 'cause they're gross."
Oh.
Amen. That's super cute.
All right, just to finish this off real quick, the how to deal. See, I feel like that article LDS Living didn't tell you how to deal with it. Like, it didn't give you any like coping mechanisms, you know, like any
Just
advice
pray
of like
more.
just pray, just you know, rely on God. God did this for you. So just.
Toxic positivity, it's all a blessing.
So that's what I kind of liked about this article was that it actually gives kind of more guidance. If you're experiencing anticipatory grief, it's important to talk about it with someone. Grief is universal, a universal experience, human experience, says Dr. Werner Lin, and discussing it with others is how you begin to work with it through it. She gives the example of a group of rare disease patients and caregivers her research team worked with. Prior to talking about their anticipatory grief, they all really independently felt like they were just plain struggling and not holding up their end of the bargain of humanity. When really that what was happening is something we could explain and work through. Talk about the dimensions of it, talk about where it moved into their lives and filled in cracks and crevices and or was taking over their day-to-day lives and their relationships. Dr. Werner Lin recommends using the American Psychological Association's Psychologist Locator Program, which I've used, and it's fantastic, to find a mental health provider who specializes in grief, whether that be a psychologist, psychiatrist, psychiatric nurse, practitioner, social worker, or counselor. Common counseling interventions include narrative therapy, which can help the grieving person reframe loss, and active listening, which allows the grieving person ample time and space to talk about their feelings, prompted by insightful questions from the counselor. This type of out loud musing can help a person process their grief. Another form of evidence-based intervention is cognitive behavioral therapy. In this type of therapy, grief-related thoughts are identified and processed, and the grieving person is taught to reframe their evaluations about themselves, the world, and their future. It focuses on managing distressing emotions and encouraging actions to help a person experience pleasure, joy, and a sense of community. If you don't have the financial resources to hire a counselor, it's still beneficial to talk to family and friends who can engage in active listening and offer other support that's important for processing grief, such as empathy and validation. For an end-of-life patient, anticipatory grief therapy may improve quality of life before death and may alleviate depression. Many insurance plans cover percentages of therapy costs retroactively via claims forms. Online therapy platforms connect you with licensed providers, which can include psychiatrists, psychologists, licensed marriage and family therapists, licensed clinical social workers, and licensed professional counselors. So, therapy. Therapy seems to be like
Always, always therapy. Go to
the
therapy.
big.
It will help you, I promise.
Yeah. So my dad's one of his best friends died earlier this year. They've experienced a lot of loss like the last year, 2 years, and He specifically, so that was one that we knew that was happening. He had a major heart event where he'd had like several heart issues, but this one like kind of just it took a turn for the worst, and he went into hospice. But like my dad, because he had so much guilt over my uncle passing away so quickly, and he had felt like he wasn't there for his brother. He wanted to be sure to be there for his friend, who was about to who knew he was going to die, and that it was gonna like it was just a matter of time. And especially when they went to hospice, and they were just it was like once you go to hospice, it's like okay, well, that's pretty much.
Yeah, that's just comfort for the end of the line, basically, right? As comfortable as you can be. Yeah.
And like they would go visit him. Like he lived 6 or 7 hours away. They would go visit him like once a week, just to be able to say, just to talk to him and say hi, and just to be there with him before he died, and so they could say that they had that time with him. So I thought that was very admirable of my dad to like take that time.
Yeah, for sure.
So.
I wish he could put that type of effort into having a relationship with his son.
Oh,
You
yeah,
know, we'll take
I
what we can get.
agree. He's capable of it. So that
That's good.
that's besides the point, I guess. But yeah, so there's that's anticipatory grief. There's a little bit of a downer, but I just
That's
thought it
really
was
interesting, yeah.
something that doesn't get talked about a lot. So I just thought it was interesting, and I just thought that it was interesting to see the church's perspective versus like reality.
Yeah. Like when I knew that my son was not going to live, the church's perspective was it doesn't matter because you'll be able to raise him in the next life. It doesn't matter. Be positive. At least you gave him a body. You'll be able to, you know, and it was not helpful because I was grieving and it doesn't help to be told, well, it could be worse.
It's fine. It's
It's fine.
you'll
Yeah.
you'll
You
it'll
know.
be better in the next life and
It'll be
whatever.
better in the next life. And that does not help a young mother grieving the loss of her firstborn child. Like, that's just, it's not helpful. And the church is so good at that, of just like, it doesn't matter though. Like, it's going to be so
Why are you
much
worried about
better.
now?
Why are you
It's like
sad?
the
Don't even, yeah. Like, Mormon funerals are so fucking weird because it's almost a
weird.
celebration of like, they're in such a better place now. We wish we were with them.
Fucking death cult.
It's a death cult.
I remember like when my sister passed away, it was like I got a lot of that, like, oh, you're gonna see her in the next life. She's in a
Yeah.
better place. She's no longer suffering with her like learning disabilities, her heart disabilities, her all these things that she was dealing with. She's no longer shackled with that. And it's
But you
like,
know what? I'd prefer to have her here struggling. Because she's with me rather than gone.
This is a person
Yeah,
that I
it's not
grew up with
helpful.
that I don't know any, I don't know life without her because she's older than me. Like she was my whole life, she was there, you know? And so like, and all of a sudden I have to deal with life without her. Like what
Yeah, it's
the
not helpful. There's nothing helpful to say to somebody who is grieving other than, I'm so sorry. That is the only thing that you can say.
And honestly, oh man, I say that now, but like, I remember when my sister died, I hated when people would say that. Even I'm so sorry, and I understand that like they were coming from like a place of like, you know, but I was just like, okay, if you're sorry, or like, well, you didn't. My thing was like, well, you didn't do anything. It's not your fault, so why are you sorry?
Yeah.
You know, and that was my brain, the way I thought of it, and I
The
was
way you
just like,
thought of it. Yeah.
I'd
Because
get
you're still
angry
in that
about
place
it.
of anger. Yeah. Absolutely. That makes sense. I know people would try and give me like advice and stuff, and I'd be like, shut up. Like, do you know how much it costs to buy a child-sized coffin? No? Shut up then. Okay? Cool. You know, like, just, it's not helpful. It's not helpful.
Oh, all right. Well, do you have any other? All right.
No,
Well,
I'm just, you know, anticipating having grief over my beer being empty and my head hurting tomorrow. It's fine.
All right, thanks listeners. We will talk to you. We'll see you next week.
See Bye. You. We'll see you. Yeah, we'll see you next week.
You'll hear our voices next week.
We'll be in your earbuds.